when we take a look at public versus private, we're able to do that just on sustainability performance, thanks to a reporting structure known as the Global Real Estate Sustainability Benchmark, or GRESB, as many will know it. And there we're able to compare the historical performance of REITs against private equity real estate funds. And what we see is that historically REITs have been outperforming the private funds. However, that gap is narrowing in recent years.
Hello and welcome to the REIT Report. I'm your host, Sarah Borgson-Quito. My guest today is Avis Devine, Associate Professor of Real Estate Finance and Sustainability at the Schulich School of Business at York University in Toronto. Avis is going to share some of the findings from her new research on the differences between public and private real estate when it comes to sustainability commitment and disclosure. Avis, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So first of all, what were some of your key findings regarding how public and private real estate compare when it comes to sustainability performance?
So there are three sort of high-level takeaways from this paper. But first, I want to clarify for everybody that when we're talking about public and private real estate, we're talking about the way that that real estate is owned. So we're not necessarily talking about public versus private in terms of government versus things that consumers own. We're talking about private equity funds versus real estate investment trusts. So when I talk about public and private, the public side is the REITs, the real estate investment trusts, and the private side tends to be private equity funds, both open and closed-ended. So when we look at the paper, sort of the most important high-level point here is that public and private real estate firms make different decisions regarding their sustainability commitments and their disclosure. And then we sort of break that apart into two different categories, sustainability performance and financial performance. So sustainability performance means things like energy efficiency, commitment to green buildings. Sustainability also extends past the environmental into the social aspects. So we're thinking about things like incorporation of diversity, equity, inclusion into firm activities and considering other social needs within their assets. Then on the financial performance side, we're thinking about those traditional measures of firm performance like income and risk management and returns. So when we take a look at public versus private, we're able to do that just on sustainability performance, thanks to a reporting structure known as the Global Real Estate Sustainability Benchmark, or GRESB, as many will know it. And there we're able to compare the historical performance of REITs against private equity real estate funds. And what we see is that historically, REITs have been outperforming the private funds. However, that gap is narrowing in recent years. And then finally, on the financial side, we're able to dig a little bit more deeply into REIT performance. Specifically, we're not able to compare it to the private equity funds due to data limitations. But when we compare REITs that voluntarily report to GRESB, so they are voluntarily reporting their sustainability performance, we see that the firms that do report on their sustainability compared to those that do not, the ones that do are outperforming. And then if we want to dig more deeply into the sustainability performance specifically, we see that where the REITs outperform the private equity, it tends to happen in a variety of subcomponents, such as measures of management, measures of asset level performance, and measures of green building certification activity. When we take a sort of a step up to the highest level of comparison, so looking at the overall GRESB scores or their rankings in the GRESB universe, so looking at all the organizations that voluntarily report to GRESB and comparing how high the average REIT rank is versus the average private equity fund rank, there, the results aren't as clean. So we don't see that REITs are just strictly outperforming private equity, but we do see that when we get into the individual components, they are outperforming in many of them. So that's a very high level. Is there an area you want to dig into a little bit more?
You mentioned that REITs are outperforming private real estate over that period, but the gap is narrowing. What do you think is really driving that?
Yeah. So I think a lot of that has to be reflected in investor demand. We have seen investor demand shaping the adoption of sustainability within the real estate industry. And this has had a couple of more recent sort of high points. Many of us think back to BlackRock and the letters to the CEOs that come out every year. And back several years ago, we saw that BlackRock really put their foot down and said, if you're not committing to sustainability, then we're not going to be partnering with you anymore. And the thing is that BlackRock carries such a big stick that when they make a decision and make a pronouncement like that, they tend to drag a huge portion of the investment grade real estate industry with them. And that means they're dragging both the private side and the public side through their investor demand. There are some that estimate that up to 70% of the market was turned into some form of responsible investor overnight by that pronouncement, just because of the reach of BlackRock in terms of people who want to align with their requirements, get on certain indices. They had this tremendous impact through what they shaped. And that's also why the adjustments to their status on sustainability that have come up this year are of particular interest to us as well. There's been some pushback on the term ESG, environmental, social, and governance, and the worry that it's being politicized on both sides and wanting to step away from that. BlackRock has been very clear that they're not changing their stance on sustainability, but they just don't want to see sustainability turn into this political weaponized tool. So we're watching all that because all of this shapes the outperformance. One of the other aspects is the effect of governments enacting their requisite policies. And we're seeing more of this happening, less so in the United States and in North America than in, say, Western Europe. But we have it here, too. And a great example is New York City's Local Law 97. There, the government is now requiring office buildings to adhere to a minimum level of energy efficiency. And so when we are seeing all of these forces push, it can really shape where the performance is occurring. And then we want to overlay that with this concept of public versus private, because public organizations have to deal with their investors publicly. They have to have a higher level of transparency in their behaviors, and they have to respond to their investors on a more public stage. So when we have these forces like investor demand, government policies, be they requisite or incentive, we can see that those are impacting our public organizations much more directly than they may be our private organizations. Obviously, this is to say that private organizations don't have to comply with laws. They certainly do. Local Law 97 applies to REITs the same way it applies to private equity funds. However, it does mean that when it comes to the level of adoption of, say, incentive policies by the government or responding to sort of when the gauntlet is laid down by major investors, the REITs are pushed more than the private equity is.
Now, looking at just the listed REIT sector, what variations did you find in financial performance between those REITs that took a more active approach to sustainability reporting versus those that didn't?
So the most important takeaway here is that we have actually confirmed results from other studies. Frequently, people will say to me, I just wish we had some evidence. And the reality is that we've been studying this for 10 to 15 years. Oftentimes, it's very difficult to get the knowledge that is accumulated in academia into the hands of industry. And that's why these kinds of venues like this podcast are so important. So it's also good that when we continue to do research, we're seeing consistency in results. And this is not to say that sustainability impacts won't be dynamic and change over time as the minimum level of acceptable sustainability continues to rise. But it is to say that these results were an opportunity for us to sort of reinforce that which we already know, which is that the organizations and the assets that are committed to sustainability outperform those that don't. So one of the things that was really interesting here is that our data set provided a new way to approach the same question. Up until this point, most of the results that have been put forward have used green building certifications like LEED or BREEAM, BOMA Best or Energy Star, things like that, as the proxy for sustainability investment. And within the real estate world, that has been one of our major tools. But here we're using this GRESB reporting. And GRESB reporting is specific to real estate firms. And it is also at a firm level instead of at an asset level. So we're able to sort of approach the same chunk of cheese, but from a different angle. And so it was really interesting to see that we're effectively getting the exact same results, that confirmation that organizations which commit to environmental sustainability do outperform those that do not, whether we're talking about that commitment being green building certification or GRESB reporting at a real estate firm level. When we get into it a little bit more, we see that the results specifically show that, you know, what we would call green REITs are lower risk, and that the sustainable investment impacts that they shape both REIT operations at the asset and the firm level. This complements very specifically another study that I've done with a co-author named Erkan Yonder a couple of years ago for the Journal of Real Estate Finance and Economics, where we really disentangled green building certifications' impact at the asset level within REITs, as well as at the firm level, and saw what the impacts were to operations and to valuation by the market of those firms. Also importantly, all of these results are robust to a number of tests. A big part of what academics can bring to this conversation is the time and methodology to really try and test everything we possibly can to make sure we're not capturing some other effect and then calling it the value of sustainability. So I have a whole bucket of common drivers to what I call the propensity to be green. Things like the market's local demand for green buildings, maybe it's shaped by higher education or consumer demand, political leaning, the demand for other sustainability products such as electric cars, the local climate intensity, which, you know, might increase our desire to build more energy efficient buildings just to keep our cost of air conditioning down in Phoenix as compared to somewhere a little bit more temperate. So we try and make sure that it's none of these things that are shaping it, that are shaping that outperformance, but it really is going to the sustainability adoption itself.
Great. Thanks. That's a great explanation. Now, looking at just the listed REIT sector, what variations did you find in financial performance between those REITs that took a more active approach to sustainability reporting versus those that didn't?
Yeah. So always the challenge is data. And especially within the lens of private equity, private equity's data is private. And that's one of the big separators between public and private organizations, be they real estate or any other type of widget out there or service in the world. We can observe so much more of the data on the public organizations than we can on the private. And so it can be really difficult to measure the impacts by asset organization type, public or private, and see what those differences are. Also, we're just governed by what I like to belovedly call our slow and lumpy asset class. Those of us who love real estate know it brings with it tremendous uniqueness at the asset level. No two pieces of real estate are ever the same. And so it gets, you know, we're constantly trying to make sure we're capturing all the things that make real estate individual transactions or assets different, so that when we then try and understand things about the real estate industry, we're understanding the right things. We're capturing the right effects. So getting that data can be difficult because it can be opaque behind private deals, which is perfectly legal, but difficult to observe, or it can be difficult to get just because we don't have near as many transactions. And when we do, those transactions often happen privately, and they often happen so infrequently that it can be difficult to compile enough data to make this analysis. For example, I'm getting a lot of interest now on healthy buildings, and I'd love to be doing some of the work that I've done on healthy buildings, on green, the work I've done on green buildings, on healthy buildings, but it just takes a certain amount of time for us to get enough data amassed on our healthy buildings that we can provide insights into what the outcomes are.
Great. And I'd be interested to hear about some of the challenges that you faced in doing this research.
Absolutely. Aside from the healthy building aspect, which is generally considered more of a social sustainability aspect, another social sustainability aspect that I've had a strong interest in is that related to DEI, or diversity, equity, inclusion in the firm. We have this tremendous depth in our finance literature going back 25 years, speaking to the benefits of having greater diversity in leadership and decision-making and in operations of a firm. And we know that in the real estate industry, this is a point of struggle for us. We are not terribly diverse. We're getting better, but it's slow going. And I see that in the classroom still as well. My classes are overwhelmingly male-dominated. And it's great to see that that number is getting a little bit more equal with each passing year. But then we want to step back and say, well, what are the outcomes of this lack of diversity in the decision room? And there's quite a bit of evidence that shows that without gender diversity, without racial, ethnic diversity, and other points of view in the room, you lose a lot of perspective. If a whole bunch of people who look the same, have had the same experience, are making decisions, especially if those decisions are being made for people in other experiences, and they don't have those other experiences perspectives, it can be suboptimal.
That's a great lead into my final question, which is, are there additional aspects of this research that you'd like to explore further at this point?
So I've been getting into some more work exploring the role of diversity within real estate firm performance. I've got a paper that's coming out soon that studies the impact of gender diversity on risk preference and risk-taking behaviors and performance in REITs coming out. And I'm really hoping to be able to extend that further into some work on racial and ethnic diversity within a real estate leadership as well and its insights. Again, my biggest hurdle there, data availability. We're working on it, but our data, especially on racial ethnic, is not nearly as strong as it needs to be.
Sounds like you've got a full plate ahead of you, Avis.
Indeed.
We'll have to talk to you again when you complete that research, because it really does sound very relevant and interesting for our audience. So love to chat about that.
I'd love to be back.
Well, thanks so much for joining the podcast. And to our listeners, if you enjoyed this episode of the REIT Report, please subscribe or leave a review on your favorite podcast platform.